Rebel Radio is brought to you by Finn.com. Let me ask you a question. Why would you spend time doing stuff you don't have to do? Let Finn handle your administrative tasks so you can be more productive and focus on the stuff that's really going to build your business, grow your career, or just let you enjoy more free time for yourself. I'm using it to book travel. I have them scheduling meetings for me. I'm using Finn even to do research on Rebel Radio guests and help me get through that process more quickly. Like any good assistant, Finn knows my preferences, remembers my contacts, all that stuff. And what I love most about it is I can access it through the website, the mobile app, through email. You could even call them. I don't know why anybody would want to talk on the phone anymore, but you can if you want to. It saved me hours and hours since I started using it. And because you listen to Rebel Radio, I'm going to hook you up and let you try Finn for free. Go to Finn.com/Rebel and get a free trial of Finn. That's Finn.com/Rebel to try Finn for free. Finn.com/Rebel.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's your boy Julian here, representing the Major Lazer crew, and you're listening to Rebel Radio. Keep it locked.
What's up? This is Rebel Radio.
What up? What up? This is DJ Newmark.
This is Peanut Butter Wolf.
It's your boy. It's okay.
You checking out Rebel Radio?
Rebel Radio.
This is Rebel Radio.
We're in the place right here. Rebel Radio is going down.
Would you say Rebel Radio?
Oh, wait. Let's do it again.
Rebel Radio.
What's up, Rebels? Welcome back to Rebel Radio, the weekly show where I talk to the rebels that are shaping youth culture. We find out how they do it, why they do it, and what you can do to get a little piece of the pie for yourself. We're also the only show featuring new music every week from our friends over at EDM.com. Check it out. This week, we are coming at you live from the Collision Conference in New Orleans. This is our first of three episodes recorded live on site. Big shout out to Collision. It was a great conference. If you haven't been, get out there. Check it out. I think it's going to Toronto next year. And you're going to want to be there. My guest, I caught up with the Jillionaire, one third of Major Lazer. He's an incredible DJ, producer, artist, entrepreneur. He's blending EDM with Caribbean music, kind of on the forefront of that. And he's also, he's going to tell us everything he's got going on. He's launched his own label. He's partnered with Bacardi to be a minister of rum and create a special Major Lazer edition Bacardi. He also has a bar, Clyde's Bar in Brooklyn. Lots of good stuff going on with Jillionaire and some great lessons about how he's striking out on his own and how his love of technology has really driven him through his career. We'll get into that right after the EDM.com track of the week.
Every day, lay back, match made, click it, listen and replay. Trip the kid is on the mic, you probably never heard of me. Y'all been typing, but in person, wouldn't say a word to me. Please, baby, I'm the best boy, smoking on the best boy. Blessing what you're living on, I'm drunk and I've been getting gone. Better be out of my mom when I listen to bass, my senses combine. Ay, better be out of my mom when I listen to bass, my senses combine. Ay, fuck y'all, find me on the moon, I'll be super high. Catch me in my hoodie with the goodie, fuck a suit and tie. Bust back, drop down.
Yo, that's Trippy the Kid with Chin Up, the EDM.com track of the week. Get over to EDM.com, check out new music, and let's get into our interview with Jillionaire.
What makes you want to come to Collision?
I come from a tech background. I had a computer since I was born, pretty much. Like, we had a TRS-80, then we had a VIC-20 and a Commodore 64. So yeah. I grew up around computers, and then that's what I studied in school, and then that's what I did. That's what I did for 10 years. And then I left that, and I went into hospitality, food and beverage, and then, you know, eventually went into entertainment, to DJing. You know?
Sure.
So it's part of my background.
I'm just gonna hold yourself.
Yeah, sure. I got asked to speak at a conference last year called Slush.
Okay.
Which is in Helsinki.
Okay.
They do a big tech conference over there, and then they just recently added a new component called Slush Music.
Nice.
So I spoke at Slush Music last year, and they invited me to come down here, so I figured, well, why not, you know?
Yeah.
New Orleans is a beautiful city, and I hope to meet some fun and interesting people.
For sure.
And learn some new stuff, you know?
So I always like to go back to the beginning. I think it tells us a lot about a person. Do you remember the first record you ever bought for yourself?
I don't remember the first record I ever bought for myself, but I do remember being, you know, I don't know, 7 years old, listening to some of my dad's cassettes. And the two cassettes that I would listen to all the time were Carlos Santana.
Okay.
I can't remember which album. It was a black and white cover. Yeah. It was this one with Jingle on it. And Olivia Newton-John.
Physical.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
And those two cassettes I would listen to all the time. And growing up in Trinidad and Tobago, we listened to there's a lot of pop music on the radio, you know. Yeah. So then after that, it was, you know, Prince, When Doves Cry, Culture Club, Clock of the Heart, like all that sort of stuff.
Sure.
But then also soca music, reggae music, dancehall music, calypso, you know, all of that stuff as well. And I think when I first started buying albums was again on cassette, and it was maybe when I was in high school, about 13, 14 years old, and there was a record shop called Downtown Outlaws, and I would go there and buy cassettes, and they would sell original cassettes, and they'd sell bootlegs as well. And I never had a copy machine, and I'd buy both, so I'd buy the original cassettes, you know, De La Soul, 3 Feet High and Rising, KRS-One, I forget which album it was, Midnight Marauders, all of this stuff from that era, and I'd buy the original one so I could have the liner notes
and see
who produced what and you know what which song sample what, and then I would also buy the bootleg to play, you know, because I wouldn't, you know, like you can lend somebody a cassette, like you'd lend somebody your cassette and then they would stretch it and then give it back to you, and then you're a kid, you're just like, what do I do?
Yeah.
And then with CDs after that, it's like you can't lend somebody a CD, you know, like after the first one you lend out, you learn your lessons right now, you know? Like I'm not lending you my CD. But yeah. So I would buy mostly hip hop at the time, you know, and then once I got into college and I started DJing, I'd buy, you know, like more reggae and dancehall stuff. So it kind of evolved through time.
So was there a first like big break when you realized that this was going to be your career?
Honestly, no. I was DJing out of high school into college, and I was DJing like on a proper like reggae sound system. Like we just used to play, like we had stacks and stacks of reggae records.
Sure.
And, you know, being a DJ back then was an episode, you know? You had to have a friend with a car, and then you would have a big, we call it a coffin or a dead man, like a big box full of 12 inches, and you'd have a smaller box full of 45s. And then in some instances, you didn't even have to walk with your own equipment, so you have to have your own sound system, you know? And even if you didn't have your own, speakers or have to walk with your own speakers or turntables or whatever, you'd still have to walk with your little echo chamber, and you had your special mic and so on. So there was a lot that went into it, and there was only room for so many people in the space at the time, you know.
Yeah.
And it was a fun hobby. It was a very expensive hobby. My parents at one point thought that I had some type of addiction, because they were trying to because, you know, I didn't keep any of this stuff at home. It was my friend's house, and it was like,
yeah,
where's all your money going? What are you doing, you know? And once I got out of college, got a real job, it kind of went to the side, because I figured, well, yeah, you know, this is a fun hobby, but it's expensive, you know, it requires a lot of resources, and you don't make money. Well, right. you didn't make money back then, because the money that you made went right back into buying equipment,
yeah.
buying turntables, etc., etc. So, and then I did IT consulting for 10 years, and then I quit my job. I opened a bar and restaurant, and then I would DJ in between gigs, you know. I did that for 3 years, and then I figured I could go back and get a desk job, or I could give DJing a shot, you know. And I started from, you know, obviously at the time I was working with Diplo. His own right. I mean, he, you know, like what he was doing, what we were doing wasn't as big as it is now, you know, but he was getting a lot of buzz off for like the Fader stuff and the Violet Funk stuff and so on. But I never really wanted to ride anybody's coattails, you know, so I kind of struck out on my own career, you know. Mm-hmm. So I tried to, you know, well, I transitioned from just being like Diplo's weird island friend to, you know, like a DJ in my own right and
right.
chasing gigs and sleeping on couches and, you know, taking the bus, you know, from LA to Sacramento.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of Amtrak, a lot of AirTran. I don't even know if AirTran is still around.
No, I think it's gone now.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the experience.
Sleeping on a lot of couches. And just going around America playing music. You know, at the time, there was a circuit of small weekly parties that you could hit up that unfortunately don't exist anymore, and you would just kind of do that and build your name and do little mixes and do little remixes, and then you eventually make your own music. So yeah, it was a growth process, you know. It's not, and I mean, it was different for me being older, because I wasn't 20 years old lying in bed going, oh, I'm gonna be a EDM superstar. Like, that didn't even exist, you know. Still, you know, like, this whole thing is still relatively new, you know. And I mean, you know, 8-10 years ago.
So what was that moment when you were like, had to pinch yourself, like, because obviously now, you know, Major Lazer's worldwide.
I think when we did Coachella,
yeah,
you know, I think that first year that we did Coachella in 2013 kind of really made me look at it, this thing differently, you know, because, you know, we don't really live with our heads in the clouds, you know. We kind of keep our heads down, we do what we have to do, we work constantly, you know, we continually trying to grow personally and in our career and so on. And I remember the first year we did Coachella in that little tent and looking out there and seeing how many people were out there, and I was like, yo, we might be onto something, you know.
yeah,
and then it was just kind of exponential growth from there, you know. We went on, we did lean on. Highlight so far is that we were able to go to Cuba, and we were able to go to Cuba and perform for over 500,000 people. You know? And it's not going to Cuba, it's not about the numbers, you know, because we thought, oh, maybe 5,000 people will show up, you know. And if 5,000 people had showed up, we would have been just as grateful as if, you know, 500,000 people showed up. So for us, it's really about just kind of like constant growth and challenging yourself, but also staying excited, you know, because at the end of the day, we're DJs first, you know, we explorers first, so we still like to go and see, you know, go into the local neighborhood, see what people are doing, see what they're interested in, see what they're listening to, you know, what's playing on the radio, what's playing in the clubs. So it's you know, it's a constant constant journey, a constant exploration.
Hey, if you're digging this one, let's go back into Rebel Radio archives, check out my interview with OK, that's OOKAY. It was one of my first interviews and one of our most popular interviews since we launched this thing. He's an EDM DJ, producer. He's hilarious on social media. He's got some great stories about just how his hustle and determination and just kind of having fun with it has allowed him to build a great career. You're gonna like that one. But let's finish up with Jillionaire first.
So what? I know you're involved in a bunch of businesses. You got your own label. You got the bar, Clyde's. I know you're working with Bacardi, maybe other brands. What are the lessons from from coming up or from working with Major Lazer that you apply to the rest of your business?
Work ethic. You know, I feel like that's something that I learned very early on from Wes, you know, was just work ethic.
So describe that, Wes.
Just, I think that a lot of times people look at you and they figure, oh, like this guy is just, you know, he's partying, he's getting drunk and he's, you know, he's, you know. But the thing about it is like, it's not really like that. You have to have a lot of discipline, you know. You have to have a strong work ethic. You have to have a very strong will, because you have to be able to come off stage, go to bed, wake up the next morning, catch a flight, you know, and still do daytime activities. You still have to answer emails, you still have to answer phone calls, you still have to do conference calls, you still have to, you know, work on music, you still have to work on stuff, you still have to email back and forth with people, you know, you still have to review contracts, etc., etc., etc. And yeah, you might have a team, and yeah, your team will continue to grow over time, but you still have to be aware, like, you still have to put in work, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that one of the most unfortunate aspects of the Instagram generation is that a lot of kids aren't aware of the work that goes into standing on stage, you know, and they just figure like, oh, like I can do that. I can go straight to that point, you know, not realizing that you have to really make a commitment, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, so I think that's, commitment,
that's
discipline,
yeah,
work ethic, being humble, you know? I mean, DJing is a very humbling experience, you know?
Why is that?
Because the pictures that you see on the Instagram are the pictures, you know, of that's the ones where a lot of people came out. Sometimes there's some ones, you know, that not that many people come out. They have fun,
right?
You know,
yeah.
But maybe some of their friends didn't get that email, you know. But but yeah, you know. I guess it's different for everyone. But for me, you know, I just try to stay grounded, stay level, and you know, and kind of keep my head down and keep working.
Yeah. So I know you're doing this stuff with Bacardi.
Yeah.
You're Minister of Rum.
Yeah.
And the Major Lazer edition. First of all, I think that's amazing. I love what you're doing with that.
Uh-huh.
I think it's really smart for them. What concerns did you have? I've seen some interviews where you talked about like how it's important to bring your culture to the discussion of rum, right? So like working with a big brand like that, I know a lot of things can go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
What concerns did you have about going into that?
Just authenticity, making sure that you know that what you're doing is legit, you know. I think that's probably the biggest thing, you know. Making sure that you are sending the right message.
Yeah.
You know, making sure that people know the story behind the product, and that applies to music as well. I think that, you know, we have entered in, the one thing that the information age has granted us is that been able to enter into a new era now where people are able to tell their stories and they're able to tell their background stories as well, you know. I mean, back in the day when you had a song, you didn't know who wrote the song or who produced the song, or you know, and now it's like, you know, you have people like, you know, you look at somebody like Bruno Mars, who went from like a songwriter, you know, he gained fame, you know, I was like, oh, you wrote this song, you wrote it for Rihanna, you wrote this one, that one. And now, you know, he's a star on his own, you know, same thing, you know, with Ed Sheeran, you know, being, you know, having, you know, Ed Sheeran wrote Cold Water for Justin Bieber, you know, and so on and so on. So
there's a lot more stories to be told now, and it's just like, how do you tell these stories of people that may have been marginalized in the past, or who may have been, you know, kind of like pushed into a niche, you know? So how do you shine a light on what the work people are doing in the Africas or in South America or in the Caribbean, you know? Nice. How do you tell this story? How you tell their story, or how do you help them tell their story? You know, how do you provide authenticity so that, you know, for instance, when we work with Bacardi, we went to Puerto Rico, we went to Jacksonville, we went to the distillery, we went to the factory, you know, we went through the whole process, you know. How do we tell that story? How do I tell my story of being involved in rum, you know, and coming from that background, and how that relates to my culture,
sure,
in Trinidad and Carnival and so on and so on, and kind of bringing the whole thing full circle. So not only is it engaging for the consumer, but it's also educational as well. So they can look at something and go, oh, I didn't even know that, you know, and there's more of a takeaway for them than just, you know, here's like a cool package, or here's a cool,
sure, sure,
cross-branded partnership, yeah, you know.
So when you think about that, what do you think brands, you know, other than putting money in an artist's pocket, what can brands offer the culture?
Well, I think that's a conversation the brands need to have with their ambassadors, you know, in terms of, okay, so you are an ambassador. What step change do you want to see? And then how can we facilitate that? You know, I think that the brands that really succeed at these type of partnerships are the ones that engage in a lot more facilitation,
sure,
as opposed to just like, oh, here's some money. Because money is cool. I mean, yeah, that's great, thanks, you know. But at the same time, how can we make a change in a community? How can we make a change in people's global perceptions? How can we make a change in terms of highlighting the works of, you know, it might be a musician or a contemporary artist or something. How do we do stuff like that so that we can bring more people into the conversation, you know? And I think that's where the brands can really, really succeed.
Okay. I'm gonna do a quick lightning round before,
sure,
I let you go.
Go for it.
Tell me one decision that changed your life forever.
One decision that changed my life forever is probably deciding to open the corner bar, 20 Arapita Avenue in Trinidad. And
nice.
I made that decision in about 2006, 2007, and things have not been the same since.
If I was on your team, what's something I would hear you say over and over?
If you were on my team, you would probably hear me use a lot of obscene language over and over. You know, I adhere to a high standard personally, and as such, I hold the people around me to a very high standard. But I am trying to work through that and learn how to motivate and inspire the people around me, and how to play to their strengths and help them grow through their weaknesses. And that might sound like some MBA bullshit, but it's real, you know, and it's real.
Yeah.
And for me, it's hard, you know, because I have to understand that, you know, everybody's journey is not my journey, and I need to acknowledge that. And I need to acknowledge that in the way that I communicate to my team, you know, and in the way that I inspire my team, you know, in that, yeah. So I can be a very hard person, because I'm a hard worker as well. But at the same time, I also like to acknowledge successes and give credit where credit,
sure,
is due.
Sure. I mean, that's such a different skill set than the things that you need coming up.
Yeah.
Who would you be most excited to learn as a fan of your work?
I think that I would be more interested in meeting with people that want to collaborate on ideas, whether it is musical ideas or social ideas or cultural ideas or culinary ideas, as opposed to, you know, I mean, being a fan is cool, you know?
Sure.
And I mean, there are lots of people that I have met in my career that I was a huge fan of. David Rodigan always comes to mind.
I met Rodigan.
And he's a legend, and I always was and continue to be a fan of his, you know. But I think that, to use that as an example, it has been far more inspiring to see him become someone that is in my life that I can sure. reach out to if we are in the same city, you know, and we can, somebody that you can engage with, you know. So I think that you know, being able to engage and have a conversation around, like, you know, with like-minded individuals with similar thinkers is what's more important for me.
Nice. What's the last great book you read?
I should be able to answer this question. What was the last book I read?
It's always hard to think of.
But what I'm saying is I should know, because, you know, I'm reading a book right now called The Grain Brain, which is about the relationship between what we put into our bodies and gut health, you know, stomach health.
Are you grain free?
I'm not grain free, but, you know, I'm paying more attention now to what I eat and what I put into my body.
Sure.
And again, how it affects mental health and how it affects, you know, the brain condition. And I'm also reading a book called Consuming the Caribbean, which has to do with just art, culture, music, everything, you know, and how that has been, you know, moving into the global landscape.
Nice.
But what was the last book I read, boy? I mean, I want to say that there was... Oh! The last good book I read was Rodigan's biography. I had to review it for Billboard Magazine Rolling Stone or one of these guys. And that was the last good book I read. I read David Rodigan's biography, and it's an excellent book. He's a fascinating storyteller, and sure. I would recommend it to anybody that is just like a fan of music in general, you know.
Nice. What movie have you seen the most in your life?
What movie have I seen the most in my life? Again, you know, growing up, every summer, all the kids would stay at my house. All the cousins would stay at my house. All the kids in the neighborhood would come over to my house. You had to watch Sound of Music. You had to watch Little Orphan Annie. And every Easter, you had to watch... I forget what it's called now, but there was a Jesus movie every Easter that you would have to watch. I think Jack Palance was in it, or maybe again that mixed up.
That's funny.
So that is not necessarily a good question for me to answer.
No, but it's never your favorite.
Yeah. I would say my favorite is probably City of Angels.
Ah, that's a good movie.
Just because, you know, I think that Nicolas Cage is an amazing actor, and he falls from heaven to become a real boy, and then loses the one thing that he loves the most.
Yeah.
And I've always find that to be very profound. I'm also a fan of the Royal Tenenbaums, you know.
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, I find all Wes Anderson movies to be very captivating, both in terms of the visual representation and the storyline as well. And in terms of the good movies that I've seen recently, I watched The Florida Project, which stars Willem Dafoe. And a friend of mine, Mella, is in it. One of our old dancers is in it, randomly. I didn't even know that. I was watching it, and yeah, one of our old dancers is in it. So that was actually very good.
Nice.
And I watched Call Me By Your Name, which was good. All the Money in the World. Yeah. So there's been some interesting films lately. You know, I'm bad at watching the TV at home, but I kind of catch them on the plane every now and then, you know. So yeah.
All right, last question. Can you pick a favorite DJ?
Can I pick a favorite DJ? I think it would have to be... It depends, you know. I mean, it's like picking up your favorite song, you know. It depends.
It's an unfair question.
It depends. Sure. It's not necessarily an unfair question, but it really leads you to think, you know. I think in terms of genres, David Rodigan, definitely one of my favorite entertainers of all time.
Yeah.
I come from sound system culture, so I have to say Babyface and Tony Matteron from King of These, which is probably gonna go over some people's heads, but
that's okay, we can take.
I'd have to say Rock the Con, because Rock the Con and Diplo were two of the first DJs that I saw when I first started, you know, came to America and started, going to these type of mashup parties that were, you know, and they were playing pop music, and then they were playing Be More House, and then they were playing, you know, soca music or dance or whatever. So yeah. Rock the Con. And definitely Masters at Work, you know. I spent many late nights, you know, staying up till, you know, 4 or 5 in the morning to go and see, you know, Kenny Dope, who is now a friend, perform, sure. You know.
Yeah.
I first got introduced to electronic music through house music, you know. Mm-hmm. So these guys always have, and always, Kerry Chandler, have always fascinated me. Danny Tenaglia. I forget who else. There's a guy who used to do 718 sessions in the basement of Santos. Mm. Tony Toker, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, the list goes on. I think that I wouldn't be able to choose. A Rich Medina changed my life when I went to my first ways. Jump on Funk, you know. Yeah, you know. So there are a lot of DJs that I have seen through time that have just been like, wow, this is fascinating to me. You know, yeah. This is crazy how this person is able to take ownership of this crowd, you know. It depends on the genre as well, you know. Carl Cox is fantastic, yeah. You know. So yeah, I wouldn't be able to choose a favorite, but I will say that, you know, there are some people that when I see them playing, you know, when I see them on a lineup or I see them in my city, I definitely want to go and check it out, you know.
Nice. Thanks for doing this, man.
Thank you for having me.
What's up with Feel Up Records?
What's up with Feel Up Records? We have a release coming out soon by a guy called Tick Leaf from, I forget which part of Africa he's from. The song is called Apart. It was out for a little while, so we're doing a license and a re-release on that. We're going to be doing a lyric video and, you know, putting some strength behind that.
Cool.
I have a couple of songs that are in the works right now that hopefully will be out by the summertime. And just continue to work with young talent. We have a radio show on Sirius XM. The channel is called Diplo's Revolution, and we have a 1 hour radio show every Friday night, where we feature, you know, just Caribbean music, world music, and, you know, just mixes from DJs and producers all around the world, you know. So yeah, we continue to do what needs to be done.
That's dope.
Yeah.
Right on, man.
I
appreciate you coming
through.
Thank you for having me.
Yo, that was Julianaire on Rebel Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. Make sure you leave us a comment on Twitter or Facebook at Rebel Radio Net. Check our YouTube channels for videos of some of our episodes. And most importantly, come back next week for more Rebel Radio. Peace.